Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Well, in the first half, I'll play an oldie but a goodie clip of me and Dr. Drew jamming with John Popper. Lior Sapir, who's has a very interesting article on transgender and kids and all that. I think you're going to be fascinated by this discussion. First, there's Geico. Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal? When it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, Geico can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance. They are all covered with Geico. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use Geico mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to Geico. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at geico.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent.
Hey guys, Jay Cutler. Started a new podcast called Uncut with Jay Cutler. Most of you know me from the NFL, some of you have seen me on Instagram, and some of you know me from the reality TV world. Each week I'm taking you along with me as we discuss football, trending topics, and whatever's going on in my life each week. I'm bringing along people that are special in my life, former teammates, friends, and some new people that I like and respect. That's what you're supposed to do, right? Podcasting? I think I'm doing this right. Can't wait to get started with you. Go subscribe now. Uncut with Jay Cutler. Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, and Spotify. Or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, from the Manhattan Institute, Lior Sapir. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and a round of made-up movie. And now, with gas prices so high, he crossed out ass and grass from his No One Rides for Free bumper sticker. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice, we got a mandate. You get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. I think I'm going to play some made-up movie today as well. And that Lior Sapir, I believe I'm getting his name right, wrote a very interesting article on trans and the Black Lives Matter movement. It's a very interesting correlation. So
hard to debate a lot of it.
We'll get into it. Yeah. Oh, did you check that out?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And
makes sense.
It makes total sense, and we'll get into the nuts and bolts of that with him when he's in the second part of the show. So first, from the personal pages, I was tucking Sonny in last night with Phil, who took a dip in the pool and then went to go thaw it on Sonny's mattress. And I don't know why. I was talking to him earlier about, getting out to Red Rocks, and he didn't go this time because he flew home a little early from Colorado. Long story, but
he didn't want to miss a test.
I said the museum, they got a museum at the bottom. It's great. You know, they got the Blues Travelers up there on the Wall of Fame, blah, blah, blah. And then he said, it's about 12:30 at night. He's like, how do you know John Popper? And I said, he's to come into Loveline. He just has a good sense of humor. I always love the band. He's just always been a guy who's been willing to play ball, just fun. A lot of bands like Blur, maybe Oasis, you know.
No, how dare you.
They don't have the same sense of humor.
What?
He's got a good sense of humor. I think a lot of it just comes from security. He's just he's a great singer. He's a great harmonica player. And
what's he got to prove?
He doesn't have anything to prove or worry about, and he just has a good time with it. And and then it popped in my head. I said, I guess I met him all those years back on Loveline.
Sonny's mystified that you know a 90s musician.
Yes. And that I said he used to come in and he would jam. He would like hang out and jam. And then I said, punch in like Loveline, John Popper jamming with Adam and Drew, and I forgot about what we used to do with him. We used to do a little theater of the mind with him, and we'll play the first clip.
As tradition would have it, we're going to do a little jamming with John. John comes now in here.
You guys got your axes on. I think we might as well.
John brings his harmonica in when he comes in to do this show. And the last few times I brought my guitar in and I jammed along with him. And just an impromptu kind of thing. We didn't work anything out. This time I've convinced Drew to bring his bass in. And I know you might not have picked this thing up since
Killer spandex, Dr. Drew.
78 is the last. Seriously, but you played a little between then and now, right?
Nice blue and yellow spandex you got on, by the way. Oh,
now, don't make a mockery of this. He's probably nervous. He hasn't played in a long time. But I got my guitar, and you got your bass. And, John, you got your harp.
Yeah.
All right, so you want to start? Let me give us a minute to back up.
What do you guys
want to
do? You think something funky? What key do you like? You like B?
Yeah, B's. Drew, do you know? Yeah. Be good.
Yeah. He's good.
All right. All right. Let me just take a second.
Hold on. Drew contributing. And here. Hold on. You know, it was Favored Nations. We got paid the same on that show. Drew to lean in and go, yeah. Nah. Yeah, okay.
And yes, then, and.
I remember very clearly. I used to go, Drew, we get paid the same on this show, except for I do 86% of the talking. Does that seem fair to you? And he goes, he'd always go, I'm a physician. Mm. I'm trained. I have a medical degree. And I'd go, okay, who makes more, a physician or Jerry Seinfeld?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And then he'd shut up. Yeah. And then that was the end of that. All right. Sorry. We'll continue on.
Take a second. Put the strap over my shoulder here.
I know that Adam can play, begrudgingly, I admit that, but I haven't really heard Drew kicking on the bass yet.
All right. Well, you ready to go?
Let's see what we got here. Nice. Drew's making the funniest face right now.
Probably listening. What the fuck does this have to do with kids and problems and herpes? But okay.
Wrong line of work. It's been a while, huh? Yeah, all right. Yeah. Oh, let's hear Drew do the proper bass solo. Come on, let's hear that.
When I was 19, I ate about 4 boiled peyote cuts and stayed up all night and felt no effect.
Wow. Jesus, Drew.
Forgot the track.
I had to bring it up to him. Wait, now he did that behind his back.
No.
That's pretty crazy.
Bye. Yeah, that was pretty fun.
You guys are pretty good.
True.
Nice.
I mean, Jesus Christ. Who the
grief?
You brought up the bass like twice in the 4 years that I've known you.
Adam, look, I was afraid you want me to play with you.
I know, but it's like if you got something and it's going to be good on the show, why don't you say it?
All right.
I think you guys should do it on the TV show, frankly.
Yeah.
It's the New York Minute Chops. I got to be honest, John Popper, fantastic harmonica player, possibly the least impressive of the three of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we knew to expect greatness from him.
Oh, yeah. Drew, you don't think it's funny about Drew? I always told him, look, I was a jock in high school. We didn't go near the theater. Those were for the homos with the berets. We wanted to do with that. I was 100% jock, and then I walked right out of North Hollywood High and onto a construction site, and that was about it. And then Drew was always like, I was in Man of La Mancha. I was a trained, we
were singing The Impossible Dream.
Oh, we had a theater. Fucking guy can't act at all. And I don't know if it's that he's begrudgingly or I
need to hear a few more of those clips before I render judgment. Did you do that with Cherry Pop and Daddies?
We would do that with Toshi Yanagi, I think is his name. Toshi is the lead guitar. He's in the band. Oh. He's in Kimmel's band.
Oh,
no shit.
Yeah. And so Kimmel's band was all put together by Cleto. Cleto is the childhood friend of Jimmy, who lived across the street back in the day. And when Jimmy, because this is how Jimmy rolls, when he was getting the band together for the late night show, he said, hey, Cleto, why don't you put together some guys and you'll be the band leader. And, he's grown up next door to the guy. He's his best friend. Jimmy's got the late night Letterman jacket on, wants to be a late night talk show host. And, 20 years later, he's a late night talk show host. And
come up next to that guy.
Hits the guy across the street. Mm. Be nice to your neighbors.
Is what you're saying?
Yeah. And so one of the guys.
Should I treat my elderly Asian neighbor the same way?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because one day.
You never know.
You may be drowning in a river, and she may throw you a rope.
Fair enough.
So I don't know who played the bass, but it was like one of these guys that Toshi just grabbed, because Toshi knows all these guys, and we would just put them in and set them up. I think there's another one where John is singing in it, too, which is kind of funny. And I don't know if Drew was a conscientious objector to this. I kind of felt like he was.
He heard Kevin Weldley's voice in the back of his head saying, don't ever do that again.
I'm not sure, but I think I heard in that first clip when John said he played that behind his back. Did you hear Drew in the background going, no.
I know.
Because happened.
John was trying to add something to it, and Drew was not having it. It was basically, if you ever drag someone to a restaurant they just don't want to just sit there and pout the whole time. The stuffed mushrooms were a little dry.
How was it?
But it's also hard because Drew's a horrible actor, so we don't really know.
I think I got it right here. Let's just see if that was Drew.
Drew never said anything. I had to bring it up to him. Wait, now he did that behind his back.
No.
That's pretty crazy.
No.
First thing you learn at when you go to the Groundlings is no.
Deny
no,
the
but. Yeah,
no.
Deny the premise. Yeah. First lesson.
No. Could have been silent there.
Yeah.
I had to yell no into the microphone. So that's awesome. That's like doing stage and acting with Dr. Drew. Do we have the one where John starts singing a little bit too?
I think we should jam again, you guys.
Let's go.
All right, get your bass on.
All right. Okay. Wow, that's pretty good. All right, let's tune up again. Okay, I'm in tune. So what do we want to do now? Let's do B and coming off the five.
Okay.
That's off the five. Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's a little musical talk, right? One, two, three, four. I like to talk on the radio.
radio show. We're talking about problems, both sexual and just being young. We'll take calls from anybody, from Genghis Khan to Attila the Hun. And Drew likes to slap that bass in the classical tradition of Freud and Brothers, and of course our old pal Jung.
Wow.
That rhymes better that way. Just a genius, but he's mean.
Everyone listen to me.
He's figured out how to program television that cannot help but be in C. I'm not sure about the general principle, of course, mind you, but it definitely evolves. It definitely involves. It definitely involves a woman on a trampoline. Woo! Come on, Adam, blow a little for us.
Wednesday night, 10:30, Comedy Central.
All right, we get it.
Good
I
stuff.
Love, but John Popper's the greatest, right?
He's the best. And he's been on here before. And remember, John Popper improves a song?
Yeah.
Which is the fucking greatest bit I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, why not be nice?
Why not?
And fun.
Yeah. And talented.
Doesn't cost anything.
That's right. And every once in a while, you got to shoot a squirrel in your home.
In your bathroom.
That's the other one. He shot a gun in his house? Well, he had a squirrel in there.
What would you do?
Yeah, what would you do? All right, so Drew's fine acting chops. I forgot Drew's.
No.
And John put the rhymes together.
Oh, John came ready to play in version number two.
Yeah, and I appreciate musicians so much. I appreciate, there was no talk or rehearsal or anything. It was just like everyone just sort of looked at each other and went, all right, here's what we're doing. And they just do it.
It looks like a magic trick to the rest of us.
Yes.
Well, I mean, the YouTube comments, even the more recent ones, I can't believe Adam, Drew, and John jammed so well. Like, everyone still believes it. A lot of people do, or they're really disappointed.
Well, it's because of Drew.
Yeah, he sold it. And then I was playing this from Sonny's phone last night, and he was like, you play? You never said anything.
Oh, wow.
First off, if I could play Mary Had a Little Lamb on a flute, you'd know.
You'd never stop hearing it.
On a recorder.
Yeah.
You would know about it, boy.
It's one of the greatest things about radio.
Yes.
Is you can just fake it just like that. It's theater. You sold it. You sold it.
Well, the beauty of radio, and, everyone's hooked on YouTube and the whole visual thing, but it's the theater of the mind. Like, I don't know what percentage of people actually thought we were playing or not, but it doesn't really matter because it just sort of melts into what it is. It's like when someone, when Kyle Dunnigan does a killer Trump voice, or like, what is going on in the audience's mind? It's just, it is at a certain point, and the closer you can get to realistic, like this, you wouldn't know unless you knew we didn't play instruments. And it just makes for the question mark is kind of fun. It's like, is there a Santa? Isn't there a Santa? You're nine. I don't know. I'm not taking any chances. I'm putting them cookies out. Like, I don't want to get screwed.
Yeah, there was a lot of that on night radio at KLSX with Conway and Whitman. There was a lot of fights that I couldn't figure out if they were real or not. But there was, it was always part of the entertaining thing about being with Conway.
Well, I asked Doug Steckler if the fights were real.
Sometimes they were.
And sometimes they're not. I mean, it's very hard to tell.
Ricky Rackman punched him in the face? Or who punched him in the
Steckler
face?
No, Steckler punched Ricky Rackman.
Didn't he fall Ricky Rackman was, or something?
That was a different story. Ricky Rackman was blocking the door,
mm-hmm.
and Steckler punched him, I think?
I thought...
Or did I get that backwards?
Well, maybe I'm just sizing up Steckler, who's
That's
a kind
true.
Of older,
diminutive.
Older diminutive guy at the time. But I think the story was Ricky punched him.
Hold
but
on.
Either
you're,
either
you're
way.
Probably right. But yes, he did also fall off the stage.
Oh, Steckler.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder what the hell Steckler's doing. I used to do their show all the time.
I saw him not that long ago, and he just was as nice and quiet as he could be. Oh, hi. It's great to see you. Hello. Hi.
Very funny
Very.
Writer. All right. So then on to other subjects. I had this. I was thinking about whenever we travel to another town, we're always inevitably going somewhere like Red Rocks, Boulder. We went to Golden, and we're always just traveling down pristine highway. And I'm always looking at the off ramps and on ramps and how well they're manicured and everything. And I just go, this was in Denver. Like, it's always so great. And then, but Denver has their flora and their fauna because of their conditions. And then you go to Phoenix and they have their own version of it. And then there's LA, which is always a shit show because we think we're in some sort of tropical paradise, but really just in a fucking flat out desert. And the guys doing the planting, all you got to do is look up and look at the freeway sign that says we're in a drought. And
well, that's that.
Go ahead and plant based on that and then put the gravel down based on it. Let's stop trying to do the beautiful, you know, the lush gardens
right,
that
right.
it's never tended to. It never works out.
Few succulents will look great.
Yeah.
But and then I started thinking, you want to be Jason Statham and not Jerry Buss.
Do tell.
That's the whole thing. Like, this is here we are. Look, California. You would like a big old head of beautiful feathered back hair. We can't do that
right.
because yeah. we're Jerry Buss.
The right. harder you try, the worse it comes
right.
out.
So yeah. now what happens is, first off, a lot of effort with the blow dryer
right.
and the comb over. It's going to take you an hour before you leave the house. And then when you do, it's going to look like shit.
Yeah.
It's, you're never... there's garbage and homeless everywhere. We're not going to pull off the manicured freeway thing. This is
not us.
Yeah, once in a while... there'll be that house in the neighborhood that has beautiful dichondra grass in the front and everything's blooming.
Mm-hmm.
But also, every time you pass it, the old lady who lives there is out front
yeah.
tending.
Yeah.
It's tending. Yeah. Or they're the guys just going full cacti and rock now, and no one's out front,
right.
but it still looks good. We don't have the time, wherewithal, or energy to tend to this. So let's not be Jerry Buss. Let's be Jason Statham. Just get out the fucking buzzer.
Buzz it.
And
own
live it.
Buzz it and
own
kick
it
ass.
And,
yeah.
and you'll be fine with it.
You'll work forever.
Yeah.
All right. The other thing was I went to the other shop and I discovered a pizza. Pizza was out. And so I had to do some, I had to ask some questions. What's the meaning of this pizza?
Oh, boy.
Because the toppings, and we can show a picture of a slice of that pizza. The toppings
oh.
on the pizza were thinly sliced tomatoes,
yeah.
which I just argue is not a topping when it's sitting
on a bed of tomato sauce.
Warm okay, if you take, I can't imagine something that has less taste than a thin wheel
hot.
of potato. Sorry, tomato. Yeah, hot tomato that you just eat, it will just taste like gush
yes.
in your
yes.
mouth.
Yes, and it's functionally impractical because you get a hold of that thing, one little corner or whatever, an edge
slides,
the rind
thing
pulls
slides off,
off. Thing, yeah.
everything
right.
around it.
Then
right.
there are pieces of basil
yeah.
scattered about the top.
Yeah,
something
they got a margarita. That basil.
Something green that's about a 3/4 wide and an inch and a half long, just sort of haphazardly tossed on there. So then I went in. I had to, you know. I start walking the grounds.
Uh-oh.
You know, what's the story with the pizza? Oh, Nate had a poker party last night. I said, okay.
I didn't get notified about that.
He must have been the loser.
Usually clears it with me, but yeah. all right. He had a poker party. Pizzas were bought.
Chris, were you there?
I was not there, no.
Oh,
I said, all right, where's the got to get to the bottom of the pizza situation. So I asked Adam, and he said, I don't know, I wasn't there. But Simon, the editor, was. So go into his bay and figure it out. I said, Simon, what's the pizza story? He said, well, we played poker, and we got three pizzas. We got the pepperoni, mm-hmm. we got the meat lovers, and we got the veggie.
Oh, boy.
And I'm like,
which two were devoured immediately?
Where are the meat lover and the pepperoni? I go, those are gone.
Yeah. Those have been extruded.
Can we just at least say this? You cannot, you're vegetarian. Vegetarian means you can't eat meat, but it doesn't mean you have to eat vegetables.
Thank you.
Can we just make a plain cheese the default setting for when you might have the person who's the vegetarian at the poker table?
Cheese pizza's great.
And I would argue that when I'm eating pizza, and I usually start with the sausage and onion or something, but it'll get a little salty, and it's a little rich, and I will cleanse my palate with a plain cheese piece and then go back to the majesty of the meat lovers at some point. So can we just make that a universal rule? It is cheese. There's no nutritional value that's being gained from this. It's annoying to the people who did finish the meat lovers because they don't want any part of this abortion. And I would argue that even the folks that say they like vegetables, this isn't helping your cause whatsoever from any standpoint.
No. You make so many good points about that.
That
doesn't look even remotely as appetizing as a piece of cheese pizza does. But also, with the tomatoes, I was just thinking, people are probably like, well, you like tomato sauce, right? This makes it better. So do you want to, like, sprinkle some cold Jack cheese over your hot pizza? Like,
I agree.
What is the point? What are we doing?
Redundant.
Look, I won't attack you if you just want to order an olive or mushroom pizza if the one vegetarian says, I like olives or something.
Because you're not getting cute if you do that. This is getting cute.
Agreed. I do not know why whole tomato slices are even an option for toppings on pizza, but they seem to be around.
It's funny you say cute. I think we're saying the same thing, but I think the opposite. I think it's incredibly basic. Mm-hmm. Like, what are we going to do on top of our pizza? Tomato? There's already tomato there. Put more tomato on. It's just, there's so many good vegetables. Peppers, onions. You can make that
mushroom
pizza sing.
Great.
Go
totally.
Garlic in a pinch.
Yeah, now you're talking.
All right. So then back to Red Rocks. I had this thought.
We've been away far too long.
Yeah. I got to get that clip, Chris, and give it to Sonny where he's singing Adam's a Genius or something like that because his little head will explode. So I had this thought. Well, I'll converge two thoughts. One is I was reminiscing the other day about the old place that I did the earthquake rehab at.
On Western?
It's off of Western and right kind of around Koreatown on Mariposa Street. And I was saying, you know, I went into every single unit. The building's about four stories tall. It was very deep. Every unit was exactly the same. And it was, there were singles. They had a bathroom, a small galley kitchen, and then one room, which
like
was the living room.
Apartment, like on campus apartment.
Living room, bedroom with a Murphy bed.
That
just pulled down. Okay. And every single unit was just a single with a Murphy bed. And when you walked in, there was a little area at the beginning, and in the lobby, there's a small lobby. You go up a couple stairs, you go into an elevator or upstairs, and you go to your unit. And then in the lobby, the person lived in a little unit that was attached to the lobby, sort of like Blues Brothers. You just like walk in, you check the person there, any mail, any visitors, and they have a note or something for you.
Hey,
you got a phone call.
My bed.
That's right. You got your cheese whiz. So, and I realized this is low cost housing, and this was built in the 20s. Like, we built a lot of these units. This place was built in 1928. It's still around today. Per square foot, I mean, in terms of the footprint of the place, is the size of a decent sized single home. Like a single family dwelling. It is, it's 60, 80 feet wide and it's 110 feet deep. And it looks like a good size lot for a home to be on.
How many units?
They would three, four stories yeah. times each side had the hall that just went right down the middle. They had, 10 units on each side. You know, there's probably 40, 50 units in this thing. And these buildings were all over the place. And it was like housing for people that didn't make much money. Later on, when I got there, that was probably in the 20s. You know, when I got there in the 80s, it was just sort of subsidized housing for people that weren't gainfully employed, but sort of took care of themselves. And so, A, this shit's been around for a long time. Like, we're talking about, hey, we need housing. We need affordable housing. We need units. We built a lot of these units, number one. But the deal was, is everyone who lived in those units was not a fucking junkie and would, like, go out in the day, go to work, and then, you know, they'd work on a railroad or some very low, you know, paying whatever, and then they'd come back and they'd have their small place that had a roof on it and a hot plate, and they would exist. Mm-hmm. And but if everyone who lived there said, I want to do fentanyl all day, it wouldn't work. I mean, the notion of, like, we need low-cost housing, that's fine for people who are willing to not fall asleep with a lit cigarette in their mouth and burn the fucking place down to the ground, or they want to be at a park slamming drugs all day. If you would like some semblance of work and life, but you're not making a lot of money, or your things are tough for you, or you just got divorced and the wife took the house or something, then you would end up here and you would live. The deal with everyone on the streets here is they're not going to make that deal. We could fix it, but it's completely unfixable if you won't just subscribe to these kind of little small rules. Mm. And it's sort of like saying,
it's off the table.
It's like saying, if this, we got a problem with a student who's underperforming. You could be a bad student, you could be underperforming. And then a teacher could volunteer to stay late and work with you, or you tutor you. It's got the word perform in it, Brian. I didn't even think. So that would work. But what if you would refuse to never show up at school?
Right.
Well, there's not a lot of teachers. You know, we go, we need more tutors. Not for people who won't physically show up.
Right.
So good luck. But what I'm saying is don't approach it like these people would like to live in this place on Mariposa I worked on. They would not.
Well, and when you say low-cost housing, not to beat the horse here, but low-cost for who? Because last I heard, these units were $800,000 a piece.
And back to Red Rocks,
we sat and
we watched the formation, the building of the amphitheater Red Rocks. And it was naturally formed, and the Indians prayed there and all that stuff.
So,
and
of course, you have to take it over and make
Whitey
it a theater.
Showed up and said, Blues Traveler needs a place to play.
He's got Dave Matthews. He's got a band.
In a beautiful setting.
You're right. We got to sell T-shirts. So in the early 40s, they started it, and then they showed a picture, and actually it was an old tape, like interviewed a lot of the guys who built it, all done by hand. You know, it's way up the mountain. There was no bobcats or backhoes or anything. There was this all done by hand, all done by, like, delinquent 16 and 17-year-old boys. Oh. They just built camps. These guys are all white. All just fucking Irish guys from broken families or were getting juvenile delinquents, getting in trouble. And they go, you know what? We're going to find a place for you to burn some of those calories.
Well, Outward Bound.
And they brought them up there, and they just swung pickaxes and wheelbarrows, and they just tired themselves out. And they interviewed these guys, like, we got $5 a week, or they got $25 a week and had to send 20 to their family. Oy. They got to keep 5, and it's like, we're all happy, we're all tired, we all felt like we're a part of something. I don't know. When did this become sort of like a racist crime or an attack on people? Like, if you're fucking delinquent and fucked up in 17, the best thing we could do for you is get you clearing forest out in the hills and get you working. Dropping off money and telling you you have a target on your back and the man is coming after you. That's all it's going to do is fuck your shit up. Like, and you realize, whether it's the house from 1928 or Red Rocks from 1942, we knew all of this shit 60 years ago. We just didn't, we're not moving on it now. We have a bunch of politicians going, you don't have to do that. I'll fix it. Well, then fix it. Mm-hmm. But you can't fix it. And these guys need purpose. But they showed, like, the group shot of like 100 of them, just
proud.
Bunch of Irish dudes.
Wow.
That was all.
Drunk.
Drunken Irish dudes.
Hey, you know what I was thinking when you first mentioned the units, the units you used to go into? There was when I was a kid, I thought the Murphy bed was the coolest thing in the world.
Oh, of course, Murphy for a kid.
Awesome. I would like to hear from callers maybe tomorrow. What was something that you thought was awesome as a kid that as an adult you're like, guess we're fucking losers?
Dude, as a little kid, all the teenagers I knew and looked up to had zits and braces, and a lot of them had a cast.
Oh, because it was a sign of
nothing's cooler than zits.
I thought braces were cool and a cast was cool too. And I would say this from what I've learned from watching sitcoms, as far as the Murphy bed goes, don't design those with a spring that has enough tension that can throw a 180-pound guy into the wall. I just feel like that's a liability.
That's right.
Right there. All right. Lior is on hold. He's going to chime in a second. We'll talk about this interesting article. First, I'll tell you about Simply Safe. Today's episode is brought to you by Simply Safe Home Security. We believe home should be the safest place on earth for every family, and I use and recommend Simply Safe. It's a great product. It's a great company. They've been with us for a million years. You don't have to drill. You don't have to pull wires, peel and stick. Everything's miniature. Batteries last up to 10 years, 24/7 professional monitoring, and their agents will dispatch police or first responders the moment a threat is detected. Even if you're not home or can't be reached, just a dollar a day, no long-term contracts. Named the best home security of 2022 by U.S. News and World Report for the third year in a row. Not too shabby. Customize the perfect system for your home in just a few minutes at simplysafe.com/Adam. Go there today for free indoor security camera plus 20% off with interactive monitoring. It's two eyes. simplysafe.com/Adam. All right. We will talk to Lior Sapir. I guess it's Sapir or Sapir.
We'll
figure that out. We'll talk to him right after this break. Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal? When it comes to great rates on insurance, for everything, GEICO can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance. They are all covered with GEICO. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use GEICO mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to GEICO. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at geico.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, Aaron in Michigan. Driving around today, I've seen two different cars, one by a nursing company and another business-owned vehicle. Has in bright red letters and a sticker in the back, vehicle does not turn right on red. Get it on.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Lior Sapir, he's a fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Completed his postdoctoral fellowship at Harvard, so he's smart and good-looking. Currently a fellow at the Manhattan Institute, and wrote an article that I found very interesting, The Assault on Children's Psyches, and it's out. You can find it now. It came out June 20th. And you can go to manhattaninstitute.org and check out his author page. Thanks for joining us, Lior.
Thanks for having me, Adam.
So let's just talk about the nuts and bolts of your thesis, and then we'll ask some questions and have a dialogue.
Sure, sure. So the gist of it is that, we know that teenage identification, self-identification as transgender, queer, non-binary, all these new kind of sexual identities has risen dramatically in recent years. We know that a large majority of these kids are likely to just desist on their own if you just leave them alone and you don't entertain their confusions. We also know that a lot of them are receiving unnecessary medical interventions that lock in their confusions and leave them sterile, deformed for life, and a lot of them will regret it deeply later on. So what I try to do in my article is I try to show how this new phenomenon that we're seeing in public schools and private schools, of course, of teaching children about gender identity and the fluidity of gender from a very early age, how that interacts with the other element of wokeness, which is critical race theory. I know that a lot of people don't think that that's a thing, so I don't even have to use that term. Let's just say progressive messaging on race issues. And what I show in the article, Adam, is that for a lot of especially white female teenagers, these girls are told day in, day out that being white puts you in an oppressor class, that there is nothing that you can do as a white person to opt out of that oppressor class, that being an oppressor is, of course, a horrible thing, that you benefit from these systems of white privilege. But at the same time, these girls are also bombarded with messages about how courageous and authentic and amazing it is to be LGBT. And one of the things that I think we are not sufficiently attuned to is the fact that, you know, unlike being gay or lesbian, being trans, queer, often doesn't require anything but just a self-declaration. So that means that these young girls can just declare themselves a non-conventional identity. And, you know, they can't opt out of being white, but they can at least, as I put it in a piece, they can, reduce the wages of whiteness. They can climb one rung up on the ladder of oppression and claim some kind of victim group. Now, this would all be innocent and maybe not newsworthy if all they were doing was declaring themselves queer or trans and moving on once they matured out of it. But of course, the second they declare themselves trans, they're affirmed in their new identity, and many of them are led down a path to medicalization.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. First off, this is a new thing, and it's pretty extreme as far as a definition of extreme for society. For society, it doesn't get much more extreme than that guy wants to be a girl and that girl wants to be a guy for society. You know, there are other trends and fads and fashion and things like that, but this is about as extreme as it gets. And part of that fucking apparatus is, sorry, I'm pissed, but if somebody dares to raise their hand and go, what's going on here? And no, I'm not going to run down this path with you as fast as I possibly can, because I have a lot of questions about why so new, why now, what's going on. I'd like to poke around a little bit. That person gets ostracized and pulled off of Twitter, and they won't sell their book at the local bookstore. It's the same thing that happened with COVID. It's like, hey, there's this thing and everyone needs to stay home for 2 years. And if somebody raised their hand and went, I don't think so, it's like, all right, now you're in trouble. You're not going to get your medical license renewed. This is the scary part of this. The part where the confused people are trying to get some intersectional points because they're in high school and it would just behoove them to do it. That I understand completely. Our entire sort of media turning against anyone who asked a question about where COVID may have emanated from. Was it a lab? Was it a wet market? How effective is our mask? Why is every other 16-year-old girl transitioning? They're just asking questions. They don't need to be pulled off of platforms and ostracized or fired from their jobs. That's the real insidious and scary part of this chapter, I think, in our society. But I'll be welcome to your opinion, Lior.
Yes, I think you're right. I think one of the most remarkable features of this new, trans revolution in our culture is, number one, how suddenly it appeared. Prior to, let's say, 2013, 2014, virtually nobody was talking about this issue. It was really, it was a niche interest of a bunch of academics and maybe some radical community organizers in San Francisco and New York. And then all of a sudden, it just kind of exploded on the scene at the state and national level. You know, I would say that the reason it has risen to national prominence so quickly, despite, you know, the fundamental, I think, internal philosophical confusions of the trans movement, the lack of any good scientific evidence for the benefits of gender transition for kids. I think that this result, I think, is from a number of confluent factors, including patronage by the Democratic Party. President Obama really put this issue on the national agenda. As you mentioned, you know, it's receiving patronage from the academy as an institution, from the mainstream media for the most part. Book publishers are extremely hesitant to criticize any, to publish any criticism of it. Medical organizations have, by and large, almost totally succumbed to its ideology. And of course, in the corporate world, we saw this past month that corporations are not only tolerating it, but they are leading the fight. You know, I would say, Adam, if you are an alien arriving at planet Earth and you know nothing about Americans, you know nothing about Western society, and you are just kind of an alien social scientist here to study, you know, American society, I think you could be forgiven for believing that there is no group more powerful in America today than transgender people. And the reason is that you have a tiny minority, something in the range of less than half of 1%, whose ideas, or at least the ideas of those who claim to speak on their behalf, of activists, those ideas cannot be openly criticized. That is a mark of supreme power. And the fact that this group also claims to be the most oppressed in society, I think, is remarkable. Now, again, I don't want to suggest that I'm not criticizing transgender people. I'm criticizing transgender activists here. That's a crucial distinction.
You know, the other thing that's sort of interesting is, and I want to talk about boys versus girls, because girls are transitioning and doing what you're talking about at a much higher rate than boys. So we can talk about, well, why isn't this affecting the 16-year-old boy who wants to get some intersectional points at on the schoolyard? Now, the other thing is back in the day, it seemed like it was boys. It seemed like it was a lot more boys becoming girls. It was exclusively boys becoming girls. And when I was kind of growing up, you know, that guy's a transvestite or whatever. Right. So that's a dude who became a chick. That's
cross-dressing.
That's pretty much it.
Meant,
and if you said, well, what about women who want to become men? It'd be like, I haven't seen that. I've seen this. Well, now it's the script has been flipped. And so if you study civilizations and trends and things like that, you have to then go, why that? Why the change? So maybe you can speak to that a little, Lior.
Absolutely. So your intuition is entirely correct. It used to be the case that, you know, gender transitions were definitely more common in men than in women. And especially at the pediatric level, the protocols developed in the Netherlands during the 1980s and 1990s that were really kind of that laid the foundations for gender transition in kids, they were based on studies done almost entirely on boys. I mean, there were some girls in those studies, but most of them were boys. All of those boys had a gender dysphoria, or as it was called at the time, gender identity disorder. Symptoms of that condition appeared very early on, prior to puberty. All of them were screened for psychological comorbidities, you know, anxiety, depression, autism, things like that. All of them had the support of their parents for undergoing these procedures. So there were, you know, rail guards. There were strict rail guards put into place by the Dutch experts for who gets these medications. In the United States, gradually those guardrails were done away with, starting in 2007. And between 2009 and 2017, roughly in that period of time, you start to see this explosion in the number of young people, mostly teenagers, showing up at gender clinics demanding hormones. The vast majority of those kids nowadays, and this is true not just in the United States, but across Western countries, the vast majority of those kids nowadays are teenage girls. They have no prior history of distress with their gender. And they exhibit extremely high levels of psychological comorbidities like anxiety, depression, and autism. So clearly something is going on here. Now, you asked, why do girls seem more susceptible to this? I think there's a number of reasons. Number one, puberty seems to hit. I mean, Gina, you could tell us if this confirm this for us. But puberty seems to hit girls harder than it hits boys. And I think for quite obvious reasons. The changes to the body are more dramatic. There's menstruation. There's accumulation of fat. It's a more distressing experience for girls, especially because girls are still judged, sexualized, objectified. And so there's more of an impetus, I think, on teenage girls to want to escape that than for boys. I don't know, Gina, does that sound reasonable to you?
That's a really good point. And we're really careful, I think, on this show and just in our personal lives not to make, you know, not to use words, inappropriately, but, you know, the word that comes to mind when you say that, you know, just that they're judged and all of a sudden you wake up one day and you're sexualized, it feels in a way violent. And I can imagine girls wanting to just snap their fingers and get rid of it at that age. When you're used to being a kid and you're looked at in a predatory way, it feels violent in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Well, and
it's interesting. Go ahead.
I was going to say, there's also the pornography aspect I've heard you speak to as well.
I saw that in the article.
Yeah. So, I mean, and this ties into what you were saying, Gina. I think it's what you're saying is right. You know, one of the things that I learned from speaking to parents of these teenage girls with rapid onset gender dysphoria, so that's the kind of gender distress that appears during adolescence rather than early on. One of the consistent themes that I heard from these parents, and you know, these parents went out of their way to emphasize this, is just how much pornography their kids were being bombarded with right around the time that they, so to speak, came out as trans. And again, this, I think, confirms the intuition that these girls are looking at images, movies of women being, you know, even if they're not quite objectified, there is, you know, an element of dominating male desire in there, and they don't want any part of it. Now, another very interesting social trends that we're seeing across the board in American society, but this shows up especially among youth, and I mentioned this in the article, is a recession of sex. We are not having as much sex as we used to. It used to be the case until recently that most teenagers who graduated high school would have had at least one sexual encounter by the time they graduated. Now, most have none. And that means, you know, part of this is fueled by social media, rising rates of social anxiety and isolation. And a lot of these teenagers have had no experience, no romantic relationships. They have nothing to base their opinions on human sex differences on. And so, again, this kind of bleeds into this notion that teenage girls have of a false notion of what it means to be a sexual creature. And they're terrified of it.
Not, you know, Brian, on top of that, of Bishop. Course. Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
So I'll jump in here for a second, let you catch your breath. You know, I have a boy and a girl twin, and they're in high school. Yes, and for now, right? Yeah. And I can tell you that the girls are much more interested in the social position and standing. I mean, first off, every time I look at my son, he's wearing the same T-shirt. It's been 4 days in a row. His hair's a mess. He doesn't seem to care. And then his buddies all want to hang out and just basically play grab ass and wrestle and fuck around all day, watch movies and stuff. There is no, you know, Black Lives Matter came and went. All my son did was make fun of it. COVID came and went. All my son did is make fun of it. And so there's no, you don't have, but my daughter, you have to worry about your social standing. Right. And so you have to kind of jump onto these things. And if you're getting knocked down a few pegs socially because you don't have any intersectional points, you're not poor, you're not black, you're not anything, well, it makes sense that a lot would try to up their position by grabbing onto this. And it's invisible. It's unprovable. You know, Rachel Dolezal aside, you can't just announce you're black. we're going to need to see some paperwork.
Well, that's the thing, too. I mean, think of, like you said, up until around maybe 2007, Lior, these were not exactly things that we brought to high school willingly. You know, in our day, you know, you didn't
right.
announce you were gay. You didn't announce you were poor. You didn't,
it was a deeply held secret for a lot of people.
And that's the interesting thing about social anxiety and general anxiety being so well received now. I grew up with it. I was fucking alone. So it is a very different world now.
Have Lior? Yeah,
let me say one.
Yes. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say one thing about maybe one additional explanation as to why this is going on with girls more than boys. You know, think about bullying, which is very common among teenagers in general. Right? When men bully each other, boys bully each other, we beat the shit out of each other. Right? We confront each other one-on-one or maybe in small groups, and we fist fight. When girls bully each other, they do it verbally. They do it through spreading rumors, through psychological torture, through ganging up on social media. Why is that important? Or at least what does that tell us about the differences between boys and girls? Well, I think one thing that it shows is that girls are a lot more attuned to their social status than boys are. And so I think that also goes some way towards explaining why girls are using kind of this LGBT identification in order to boost their own status, their social status. And we also know that, you know, young white liberal females are, young white females are a lot more liberal than boys.
Oh, interesting.
So, you know, if they could also score intersectional points and, you know, subscribe to all the other Black Lives Matter and all the other movements along the way, that also boosts their social standing.
I would probably, I mean, there's probably another component that I always kind of talked about from doing Loveline all those years back when I wasn't jamming with John Popper. Women are just more flexible and more fluid. There's so many more women who would tell you they had a gay experience in college because they're not lesbian, but they're really attracted to their roommate, and one thing led to another.
Right. No big deal.
Yeah, there's a kind of flexibility where guys are much more rigid in their sexuality. It'd be very difficult. Those kinds of I hooked up with a dude in college. Those stories don't exist for straight guys.
Right. It's not socially acceptable.
It isn't, but it's not the social acceptance of it. It's our rigidity sexually. We're just not into it. Mm. Like, there is no room. We're in kind of a small box sexually. Here's what we like.
I was thinking the same thing. It manifests itself as what our guest is talking about.
Yeah, and so women
expressing itself
by nature, it's just so much more fluid. Yeah. It's like they're more limber than men. They can, you know, bend down and put their forehead on their knees, and a lot of guys are like, can't
literally limber.
Yeah, so there is like just a sort of fluid kind of like they're willing to slide over here, whereas guys, that is a major commitment if you're going over there. But who was the female author who wrote the book on this subject that I think you've probably referenced before?
Abigail Schreier. And I recommend to all your listeners to buy her book on Amazon and read it, because it's superb. And in some ways, it laid the foundations for the kind of research and journalism that nowadays is exposing these cults among teenagers. Let me just say one thing in response to what you're saying, Adam. I think that's a really interesting point. I guess two things. One is that, you know, for girls, that kind of fluidity, that kind of ability to move around in terms of identity and things like that, you know, that's also a huge burden. Because, you know, all teenagers want to have a settled sense of who they are, of identity. And so I think for girls, it's that much more difficult, precisely because it's more acceptable for them to move around and test out categories. But the other thing, and this is something that a colleague of mine, Eric Kaufman, found in a study that I cite in my piece, is that for members of Generation Z, meaning born after 1997, the idea of sexual desire, sexual orientation, what they feel, their attraction, their erotic longings for other human beings, seems to be totally independent of sexual identity, which is a very interesting thought, right? The idea that a young woman can identify as lesbian but not have any romantic, let alone sexual, relationships with another woman, but still declare herself lesbian. And that is what we are seeing increasingly. And I have to say, when I spoke to these parents in California, some of them told me that their daughters have, you know, all of their friends and their friend cohorts identify as either bisexual or lesbian, despite the fact that none of them have had any intimate romantic relationships with any other human being. For them, it's a political identity, a social identity, more so than it is a sexual one.
I imagine you would see more of this in San Francisco and L.A. than you would in places in Louisiana and Mississippi, which would sort of, I guess, kind of bolster your point. It also makes another point, which is, well, maybe they're just scared to come out in Mississippi. But I would assume in places where you got some points for this, there'd be much more of it going on. And in other places where there was a deduction.
Keep that to the dole this,
But have you checked sort of regionally?
We don't have statistics on that. You know, to the extent that we do, they're usually filtered through LGBT advocacy organizations that are notoriously bad at, you know, providing rigorous data on these issues. I mean, you know, one way to think about it is for people on the left, you know, the kind of the dramatic rise of LGBT identification among generations. So, you know, Gen Z is, according to a recent Gallup poll, a little over 20% of them identify as LGBT versus millennials. My generation is a half of that, 10%. And then it halves every single time you go back another generation. And, you know, one hypothesis entertained mostly on the left is that this is because, you know, we have warming social attitudes. It's more acceptable and they're coming out in greater numbers. And so this was, you know, they were always this way, but now it's just the social penalties have been lifted. You know, sure, I understand that explanation, but a much more plausible explanation is that in our culture nowadays, and especially in very progressive enclaves of the country, like you were talking about San Francisco, you know, these kids are responding to social incentives, to social cues. Everything in their life environment is telling them that if they identify this way, they're going to get a huge boost in reputation and status. You know, one of the parents I spoke to even told me that a teacher at her daughter's school has a more lenient homework policy for students who identify as LGBT. I mean, if you're a teenager and you see these kinds of things. Yeah.
Well, right. I'll tell you another residual effect of this. And again, you have to live in San Francisco or, you know, the west side of Los Angeles for this, Santa Monica, Pacific Palisades. There are a lot of parents, but women, especially moms versus the dads, who seem to be getting some reflective glory over the kid who's transitioning because they bring it up a lot. Mm. And the thing is not so much with the dads, because we're back to the social standing. And again, this ain't going to work in Mississippi. But I have been confused where your kid's sexuality or your kid's identity sexually has always been something that parents never really broached, you know?
Now it gets you some cachet at the tennis club.
Sometimes you talk to women especially, or you hear them on TV, you know, as a mother of a transitioning, you know, you hear them all, you know, they don't pop up on Fox because they're not getting any points on Fox, but they go on MSNBC and as a mother who is, and then Roe v. Wade and blah, 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 and it's like, oh, you're getting some Munchausen by proxy off of the kid transitioning, and thus you're kind of aiding and abetting because now you get a little reflective glory off of it. And why wouldn't you? Why would you try to talk your kid out of something that you're going to get a reflective glory on? Abigail Schreier, I think I'm not pronouncing her last name incorrectly. See, my whole part of this is, have we turned the corner on this, or does someone like that need to have, you know, when she dropped this book, she was not being welcomed at bookstores, and the same apparatus, just it's the same group, it's the COVID group, it's this group, it's all the same asswipes that try to, who never stop talking about McCarthyism, trying to get everyone fired and shut everyone down, who just has an opinion and maybe done a little due diligence on the subject, is it a different, it's like Black Lives Matter took about 10 minutes and now no one's into Black Lives Matter anymore. And it's kind of going that way with lockdowns and COVID and all that stuff. You would be destroyed for speaking out against. Now, you know, the bloom is off the rose. But is that true with this subject? Because I feel like this one's turning pretty quick, too.
Are you asking, have we turned a corner? Or are you asking?
I'm saying people like you can speak out without, you know, being removed from your livelihood, or could publish a book on it and it could be at a local bookstore.
Yeah, sure. So look, I mean, we don't live in a totalitarian state, at least not yet. But there are those who would nudge us in that direction. And among them, I include, unfortunately, the Biden administration. The Biden administration recently announced an executive order. President Biden signed an executive order that, among many other things, for instance, tries to stop what it calls, quote unquote, conversion therapy, which is nothing more than, you know, psychologists exploring why a teenager might want to go down the road of hormones and surgeries because maybe something else is bothering them in their lives. So the Biden administration, along with Democratic lawmakers in a number of states have already done this, is trying to stop that from happening through Title IX. The Biden administration
it's by the way, ironically called conversion therapy by them, but it's not conversion therapy. It's you want to
don't conversion
you
therapy.
Convert
aversion therapy.
Maybe you should talk to somebody and see if, you know, before you, this is a big step.
But conversion therapy, if I'm not wrong, in its traditional sense is you have say you have a gay son and you'd very much like to make him straight. Is that how we're generally used to hearing it?
Yes, that's the traditional understanding of the concept, and you know it has been debunked scientifically that can work, but trans activists have tried to harness that same concept, and they've been successful in doing this through medical associations like the American Academy of Pediatrics. They're trying to harness that same concept to discredit any effort to try to make a teenager feel comfortable in her body. And I should point out there's a supreme irony here, which is that if you look at research on childhood gender dysphoria, what you see is that a majority of those who experience this psychological condition, if you just leave them alone and you help them feel comfortable in their bodies, most of them will come out as gay or lesbian. So, you know, this idea of gender affirming, quote unquote, gender affirming medical care, where, you know, their identities are affirmed with hormones, puberty blockers, surgeries, that itself is conversion therapy. You are taking gay and lesbian kids and you are trying to convert them into the opposite sex. But, you know, this is an opinion that you're not allowed to say nowadays, even though it has quite a bit of backing in scientific research. Mm-hmm. But look, I mean, yes, I'll repeat what I said earlier. We don't live in a totalitarian state. There is some space for criticizing these ideas. Have we turned a corner? It's hard to know because you have one of our two major political parties, the party that happens to be in power, control the presidency in both houses of Congress. That is fully gung-ho behind gender-affirming care and the most extreme interpretations of trans activism. I should point out, even though the most progressive welfare states in the West, including Sweden, have in the last 2 years have been moving very quickly in the opposite direction. The United States now is an outlier in the area of pediatric gender medicine.
The left is done. The left is done with Sweden. It used to be Sweden. You know, I grew up with the moms like in Sweden, blah 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 blah. Ever since COVID, they're like, oh, they didn't fucking shut everyone down and lock them in their apartments. Oh, not so no much Sweden. And now the transgender thing. You're dead to us, Sweden. All right, Lior Sapir, thank you. For coming or zooming in. It's very interesting thoughts. And it's just
for having me.
My pleasure. And I'll give you a plug. The Assault on Children's Psyches. And you can find that on the author page, his author page at themanhattaninstitute.org. Just more thoughts, more data, more things. I don't know why it makes everyone's like you're a bigot or like literally. If you
both can be true.
You go, did the leak come from a lab in Wuhan? Mm-hmm. And it's like bigot. Yeah. It's like that's not a bigoted thought. We're just asking where the fucking thing came from.
Well,
that's
and
all.
Someone like Lior, who you know we just all met for the first time, very very easy to listen to and to take him seriously because he doesn't seem like he has a personal axe to grind. He's just showing the data that he's found.
Yeah, very interesting, very articulate. That's why I'm glad we got him on. That's Chris Maxipad. By God, that's producing. All right. We got Made Up Movie coming down the pike. First, I'll tell you about Freeze Pipe. Today's episode is brought to you by Freeze Pipe, the smoothest hitting pipes and bongs around. Tired of the hot smoke, burning the throat, or coughing attacks after you light up? You can check out the ice-cold Freeze Pipe. Whether you smoke THC or CBD, it's the smoothest and most pleasant way to relax. The secret is a freezable, non-toxic glycerin chamber that's on the pipe. And you pop it in the freezer for an hour, and the smoke passes through it, and it's instantly cooled over 300 degrees. It's quite a piece of technology without moving parts, but it works. Take bigger rips and zero chest and throat burn. It is Freeze Pipe. Am I right, Dawson?
For the coldest and smoothest smoking glass pieces around, check out thefreezepipe.com. They make pipes, bubblers, bongs, and more. And make sure you use code Corolla for 10% off your first order. That's thefreezepipe.com. Code Corolla for 10% off your entire order.
All right. We will play a little made-up movie, and we'll do that right after this.
All this month, stream the funniest films for free on Pluto TV. Watch comedy classics like Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, and Mean Girls. Or drop in for a Tyler Perry marathon with a Madea family funeral and Madea's witness protection. Pluto TV also has hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and TV shows like Get Shorty, Be Cool, Key and Peele, Comedy in Color, and more. And no contracts, no subscriptions, no fees, no joke. So download the Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start laughing today. Pluto TV, drop in, watch free.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on. Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.